If you've ever thought you'd like to get away from it all, to strike out on your own on a long trek where you're relying on your own resources and perhaps the kindness of strangers, listen up. This is the second part of Rachel Everett's account of her 3-month bicycle ride from Broken Hill to Alice Springs, raising money for Lifeline. It's an intimate and raw account, an audio diary that she recorded along the way, where the strangers aren't always kind, and getting away from it all sometimes just feels like deep loneliness. In the first part of Rachel's ride, she hit sand dune country with 100 plus kilometres of undulating hills that forced her to walk her bike. And by the way, if you missed that first part of Rachel's story, you can hear it at the Life Matters homepage. Now she's past the halfway mark and heading for Alice Springs.
It is day 43 and I'm actually over halfway, over 1,000 kilometres I've ridden. Today is day 46 and I am on the Ednadatta track. There was a car travelling really fast and they just got too close. So I dropped my bike and I stepped out in front of the car to force the car to move around my bike. They stopped and then they had the hide to ask me what was wrong. And I wasn't very happy and I wasn't very polite. I know that through some people that I met, they camped with Hiker, the other cyclist, and they said that she had been hit with rocks from passing vehicles. And I certainly don't want to be hit in the face by a flying rock.
It's been a long while since I have recorded. There's a few reasons. I guess the biggest one would be I was terribly lonely. I met someone and yeah, that was good. And then it kind of wasn't. And now we're back to being good. So I spent 8 days in Ednadatta working at the Ednadatta Hotel with my friend, and we were getting free accommodation for our services. We cleaned the rooms, we made the beds, we cooked sometimes for the publican Bruce, and there was Ronnie, who was not shy about telling us that he was famous. He was in the last taxi to Darwin. And he was lovely and funny and wasn't shy about telling us how famous he was. Today is day 78. I counted 8 punches in one tube. I had moments where for like minutes at a time I'd be cycling over this really, really rough track. And all I could think about was breaking my arm. And the words broken arm, broken arm, broken arm would be repeated in my mind. And then I would get off and walk.
Today is day 85. Clear skies today, which is really good. Because today could be my last day on the bicycle. I just saw a shooting star. I've seen a few this morning and last night. I am approximately 64 kilometres from Alice Springs. Almost 3 months. I think it's 12 weeks today. It's my last day on the bike. I don't have to poo in holes anymore. I don't have to carry all my toilet paper and my rubbish. I can wash my hair as many times as I want. Thank you to the rain and the clouds and the sunrises and the sunsets and the trees, the big desert oaks here, and all of the people that made my trip, who helped me, who gave me a bed, who fed me, who donated to Lifeline, my team at home, and I think the dingoes and the emus and the owl and all the birds and the ravens that kept me company. Oh, there we go, there's a raven. Thank you to country for all the places that I slept in, for protecting me, for the water and the creek beds, for just an incredible journey. It really grounded me. I felt so good and relaxed for it. He flew away and he came back. There's two of them now. There he goes. Okay, I guess that's my goal to get up. Anyway, it's my last day, so I'm going to get packing and rolling and I'll check in again this afternoon. I was just this free spirit cycling down a desert highway in the middle of the country. It was so incredible. I put on my music and yeah, just pumped away. But it feels really, really great. Just so much great pleasure.
I've done it.
It was quite amazing.
Gosh, you can really hear the elation and relief and pride in her voice, can't you? Rachel Everett cycling into Alice Springs after 3 months riding from Broken Hill through some pretty demanding country. And that was an edited version of the audio diary she kept along the way. You can see a map of her travels and her blog on the Life Matters webpage. The producer of Rachel's story was Regina Botros. So what does drive a person to venture out alone on a long journey in difficult conditions? Rachel was raising money for Lifeline, but beyond that, what's the impetus? Do you harbour a desire to test yourself in this sort of way, physically and mentally? Have you done your own version of an endurance event? And what did that do to you physically or in other ways? You can get in touch on Facebook. Dr. Phil Chapman is a sports scientist at the Australian Catholic University. He studied the impact of long endurance journeys on the body, and he's done the odd long bike ride himself. Phil, so what is the body going through when you're doing that sort of thing as Rachel did, on the bike every day, you know, carrying all your gear in some pretty extreme conditions?
Oh, the body is an amazing machine, really, and what it's doing is it's adapting to that physical exercise. And so she would have started out relatively not fully conditioned, and then she would have actually got more and better conditioned as she rode through the journey. And so by the end of the long journey, 80 plus days, she's probably actually in better physical shape than when she started, even though it's sounding from her story, the country is probably the toughest country on the planet, and but she would have adapted to that training stimulus.
Phil, are all of these journeys, though, ultimately mental? And that's what sort of compels people to push themselves into these sorts of endurance treks and races?
Yeah, the nature of ultra-distance challenges is that there's definitely that physical side of it, and you need to overcome that and adapt to it. But yeah, like you said, the psychology of it is probably more important than the physiology, in that you need to overcome adversity. It's the planning of the trip, and then having that intrinsic motivation to actually do the challenge, and that's probably the most important part of anything to do with ultra distance challenges.
Well, we're also joined now by Lisa Blair. Lisa is a sailor. This year she sailed solo around Antarctica. Brr, makes me feel cold to think about it. Lisa's on Skype from her boat. Hey, Lisa, before we talk about sailing around Antarctica, just while you were listening to Rachel's cycle from Broken Hill to Alice Springs, anything strike you? Any similarities or differences from your own experiences?
Yeah, I mean, it is a mental game. Like, it's an endurance sport. And I actually, it's one of my fundraisers to sail in a yacht race around the world. I cycled 1,300 Ks as a fundraiser, so I can completely relate to her journey and to the mental aspect and just having to keep pushing through to get up that hill and to get over that next hill. And, you know, it is such a tough thing to go and out to achieve. So she's done fantastic to be able to, you know, set that goal and go and achieve it, which is amazing.
Well, how do you plan mentally, Lisa, for a long solo voyage for sailing around Antarctica?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's not a whole lot you can do apart from really think about, like for me, I think I visualize a lot. So I think about what's the worst scenarios I can encounter and how can I make the trip safer? And if I have that belief in my boat to get me through, you know, conditions that are the same as a hurricane or a cyclone, and actually physically know that my boat can sail me through, then I mentally can survive those conditions or tackle those conditions with a lot more confidence. And then I don't end up in that scenario where I'm constantly doubting my own ability or the ability of the boat to get me through, which leads you to really worry and stress and overthink everything. So for me, preparation for any of these sort of adventures is just so important to the success, mentally or otherwise.
What about the physical stressors, though, on your body when you're sailing solo for that long? I mean, they're going to be very different from getting up every morning and getting on a bicycle.
Yes, definitely very, very different. My physical challenges actually were I was living in 10 square metres of space for 4 months. And because it was so cold on deck, I was really down below the whole time. So I would only be on deck for about an hour a day. And so it was a lot of sitting and standing and having no real room to move. And then you'd have to go on deck and do short bursts of intense activity with no warm up and with no warm down. And so your muscles are either like in this relaxed state or then they're working really, really hard and there's not much in between. It's definitely a challenge.
And herein life matters. Just in case you're thinking of taking yourself on some sort of long-distance endurance activity, we're discussing the effect of these sorts of things on body and mind. I'm Amanda Smith with Lisa Blair, who's a long-distance solo sailor, most recently around Antarctica, and Dr. Phil Chapman, a sports scientist at the Australian Catholic University, who studies the impact of long-endurance journeys on the body. Now, Phil, with endurance events, among the whole raft of people who do these sorts of things, from your observation, are there common factors that unite them, you know, in terms of personality type?
I see two factors. The first one, these types of people tend to be a little bit OC, like obsessive compulsive, in the fact that They look at the minute details, and you have to because you need to plan these challenges to the nth degree. You have to, and as Lisa said, you have to actually visualize worst case scenarios, and then you work backwards as to how you would cope with these worst case scenarios. And so that's and by their very nature, those people are great planners. They look at every single detail. And then the second factor would be resilience. And so when you confront adversity, you are resilient in overcoming those adversities. And definitely with every challenge, from Rachel's challenge to Lisa's challenges, they have multiple adversities every day. There's something going wrong, you know, 8 punctures, being almost hit by a car, that sort of thing. You have to overcome that. You just can't throw your bundle and walk away. You have to be resilient. And they're the two things that I see.
But Phil, what about the why of doing this? What's the appeal?
Well, good question. every person has their own reason. You have the intrinsic motivation that someone needs a challenge, and our lifestyle is that everything's there are very few large challenges. You know, we've got family challenges, we've got work challenges, but we can overcome those quite quickly. But a more overt challenge is going from point A to point B, or in Lisa's case, going round in a circle of Antarctica. That's it's a simple goal. It's a huge challenge that no one else can do, and that's why it's appealing. And it makes you, I guess, feel more alive that you can overcome all the challenges and do and be part of that. And then there's also the extrinsic side, the charities, working for them. You're getting slaps on the back for doing something that no one else has done, and all the kudos that goes with that.
Well, Lisa, you've done two solo long-distance sailing adventures to date. What do you reckon you learnt about yourself on these?
Yeah, you definitely have a lot of time to think. I think, as Phil was just saying, the resilience and the attitude towards preparation and trying to push yourself outside of your boundaries. For me, doing these challenges is about seeing what I'm capable of. And once I do one challenge and I'm successful, then I ask myself, well, what else can I do? And I'm sort of half driven, focused, just to go out and find another challenge that I can go and do and see where that will take me. And I just think it's such a unique kind of lifestyle, but I also highly promote promote the fact that I feel like anybody can go out and achieve what I've achieved. It just has to be something they really want to do. And I like to highlight that, because I'm not anyone special. I was dyslexic in school. I'm not this great computer person. I'm not unique. I'm not an amazing sailor. I've been sailing for 10 years. And so for me to be able to go out and sail solo across, you know, the Tasman Sea to New Zealand and back, and then also sail solo around Antarctica, it's just, this is my desire, my choice on what I wish to do. But I really feel like anyone can go out and achieve their goals, whatever they might be.
Phil, how easy or otherwise is it to resume normal life after you've done one of these sorts of big challenging trips? I mean, for some people, Rachel, I think, who did the bike ride from Broken Hill to Alice Springs, it's a sort of once in a lifetime thing. But for others, and it sounds like Lisa is in this category, can you get a bit addicted and just want to keep going, keep doing more and more of these sorts of things?
Oh, absolutely. And it is highly addictive, the lifestyle that Lisa has and others doing, you know, bike rides or runs or any other sort of activity. And so, yeah, there's those two types. You've got the person who's got that itch, they just need to do it once and then that's it, and then they can resume their normal life. And then the others are just, it's just, they just want to keep doing it over and over again to get that thrill, the sense of achievement that, and it defines their life rather than just the one-off.
Yeah, and Lisa, that is you by the sound of it?
Yes, I think you summed it up to a T right there.
Lisa, what is, though, the best thing about finishing this sort of long-distance expedition? I mean, we heard Rachel there, the kind of incredible rush of joy and relief in her voice as she cycled into Alice Springs. What's it like for you finishing one of these sorts of events?
You know, it's interesting because I set lots of goals along the way when I do these. And my first goal was to get to the start line, because to me that was one of the greatest challenges. Raise the money, get the boat together, prep everything and get to the start line. And I remember sailing out of Albany just thinking to myself, I'm so proud of this achievement. And the rest of it was relatively irrelevant to me, because my goal was to get to the start line and I'd achieved that goal. And that was a huge proud moment to me. And then to be able to actually successfully complete, you know, 100 more days at sea solo in the world's most dangerous ocean and come back to my family and friends and the people who welcomed me in on the dock. I mean, I think there's very few words that can describe that feeling. But it is this euphoria and it's this excitement, and you just sort of, you kind of ask yourself, well, what's next? But then at the same time, you almost feel like it never happened because it's gone in such a blink. Like every day that you're out there feels so long. But then the minute you finish, you're like, wow, I've just spent all of this time away doing this challenge and now it's over. And it almost feels like you didn't even leave, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I can get a sense of why it might be addictive. Lisa Blair sailed solo around Antarctica earlier this year. She's joined us on Skype from her boat. And Dr. Phil Chapman is a sports scientist at the Australian Catholic University, a cyclist who studies the impact of long endurance journeys on the body. It's great to talk to you both. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Amanda.
And if you harbour an interest in taking on some sort of long-distance endurance activity, let us know what the appeal for you is. Perhaps you have done something like this. Why don't you tell us how it was, what it did for you? You can post on Facebook. Be great to hear from you. This is Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith.